You know that feeling? It's a Tuesday afternoon, maybe 3 o'clock. You've read books, you've listened to the shows, you intellectually get why you react to stress the way you do.
You've got the theory down cold.
Exactly. But then your boss sends that one vaguely worded email, or your partner makes a certain face, and boom,
All that theory just goes out the window.
right back in the loop. Same anxiety, same defensiveness. It's like you're on autopilot.
It's the difference between knowing the map and, actually being able to steer the car. You're gripping the wheel, but the car has its own GPS set.
That is the perfect analogy. And that gap between knowing you're stuck and actually getting unstuck, that's where we're going today. We're doing a deep dive into this really provocative methodology called imperative self-analysis.
Or ISA for short.
Yeah, ISA. Our source is a book by a therapist named Clint Matheny, How to Break Free from Your Emotional Autopilot. And I have to say, this is not your standard just breathe advice. It feels more like, I don't know, debugging your own brain.
It really is. It's an almost engineering-like approach to psychology. Matheny basically argues that your personality, your neuroses, your so-called character flaws, it's all just a legacy software program.
And the kicker is that you wrote the code when you were, what, 5 years old?
That's the terrifying part.
We're letting a kindergartner drive the bus of our adult lives.
Yeah.
So I think the mission for this deep dive is clear. Figure out what this imperative self is, why talk therapy might not be enough, and how we can actually, delete the command line.
And delete is the key word. He's not talking about coping. He's talking about making it obsolete.
Okay, so let's start with that central idea. Emotional autopilot. Because he means something way more specific than just zoning out,
He
right?
does. He uses this firmware analogy that I think is really, really helpful. Think of your brain as the hardware, your neurons, your nervous system, that's all working fine.
Okay.
But running on top of that is an operating system. And Matheny's argument is that very early in life, probably in response to some kind of stress, we install a command, a rule.
And that's the imperative.
Right. An imperative is a command. Do this. Be this. Get this. A kid feels unsafe. Maybe they get ignored. And to survive, they write a rule. I must be perfect to be safe, or I must get attention to exist.
So if my rule is I must be perfect and I make a typo in an email at age 40.
Your brain doesn't see a typo, it sees a tiger in the room, a genuine survival threat. And this is why Matheny says we're not broken. If your computer's code says if X happens, crash, and X happens, the computer isn't malfunctioning.
It's just successfully executing a bad program.
Exactly. And this model isn't brand new. It was actually developed back in 1988 by Leslie Cameron Bandler.
Right.
But Matheny's big contribution, and he's really honest about this, is that he admits he spent the first 10 years of his practice using it completely wrong.
I saw that he was trying to optimize the neurosis.
He was trying to help people get better at their obsessions. So if your drive was to be successful, he'd try to help you do it more efficiently. He was polishing the cage, not opening the door.
But then he just hit a wall. He writes, and I love this line, "Nobody needs an imperative self. Nobody needs obsessions."
That was the pivot. He realized these drives, this need to do, be, or get, they aren't the engine of success. They're just anxiety wearing a business suit.
So he shifted the whole goal from success to peace.
And his definition of peace is, I think, the most profound thing in the whole text.
I underlined it twice. It's peace isn't something you have to force. It's what's left when the nervous system no longer has to brace.
No longer has to brace.
It implies our natural state is peace, and we're just constantly actively holding it back with all this survival programming.
That's the whole theory. But to stop bracing, you have to know what you're bracing against. You have to find that specific command.
Which brings us to the diagnostic part, the emotional palette.
Yes.
This one, I'll be honest, this challenged me. Matheny claims we only cycle through about 5 to 7 core emotions. That feels, I don't know, a little reductive.
Most people have that reaction. We want to believe we're these vast, complex emotional beings.
Yeah.
But he argues if you strip away the story, the why you're mad or annoyed, and just look at the raw feeling in your body, it's remarkably repetitive. We have an emotional fingerprint.
So he gives you a challenge, a 7-day audit.
A 7-day emotional audit. And the rules are strict. You can't do it on vacation, can't do it during a crisis. It has to be a typical, boring week.
And he has that warning about hidden emotions, which is where I think most of us get tripped up. We think, oh, I'm not emotional, I'm just working.
The classic trap for high achievers, we just label high arousal states as focus or productivity. But he asks, what's fueling that work? Is it curiosity Or is it that low-level hum of pressure or anticipation or fear?
It's like the hum of a refrigerator. You don't even notice it's there until it suddenly stops.
That's a great way to put it.
So, okay, let's say I do the audit. My list is, I don't know, anxiety, frustration, overwhelm, maybe a little pride. What does that list actually tell me?
It points you directly to what he calls the virtual question. That's the command line. If your palate is full of anxiety and overwhelm, your virtual question is probably something like, am I doing enough to be safe?
And your brain is just constantly scanning for evidence 24/7.
Always. It's startling, isn't it, to think that a 40-year-old is running their life based on the logic of a 7-year-old. But look at the desires. Do, be, get. It's kindergarten logic. Good boy or bad boy. Safe or unsafe.
And because you can never do enough to feel permanently safe, the loop just runs forever.
It never stops.
Okay, so the million-dollar question. How do we turn it off?
Because I've tried thinking my way out of anxiety, and that usually just makes me anxious about being anxious.
Right, because you're using the wrong tool. You're using your logical brain to try and fix your emotional brain. They don't speak the same language. You cannot talk yourself out of an imperative. It's not logical. It's survival-based.
So what's the ISA method? He describes these 2 or 3 hour sessions. What is actually happening in there? It's not years on a couch. No, it's a process of reverse engineering. They take the current feeling, that Tuesday afternoon anxiety, and use it as a bridge. They follow that feeling back in time, looking for the earliest memory of it, the Genesis event.
And he really emphasizes that this event often isn't what we think of as big T trauma.
Not at all. It could be dropping your lunch tray in second grade and having the teacher laugh. To an adult, it's nothing. To a 7-year-old, it's social death. And in that moment, the decision gets made, I must never look foolish again.
And once they find that moment, that memory.
They use techniques, like clean language, to let the adult consciousness revisit that memory. And when the brain realizes, oh, I'm not 7 anymore, dropping a tray doesn't actually mean I'm going to die, the whole structure loses its purpose.
It's like updating a file. The brain sees the protection is actually obsolete now.
Worse than obsolete, it's expensive. It costs a ton of energy to maintain these defenses. Once the brain sees it's unnecessary, it just drops it.
That distinction is so important. Most therapy helps you build a better cockpit to fly the plane. This sounds like realizing you can just land.
Or that you were never in a plane to begin with. You were just sitting in a flight simulator screaming at a screen.
But does it actually stick? I mean, life-changing breakthrough in 3 hours sounds... It sounds a little like late-night TV. I'm skeptical.
And you should be. That's the right response. But the case studies he provides are fascinating because they focus on the absence of the old feelings.
The dog that didn't bark.
Exactly. Take Bill. He was 65. After his session, he looked at his old list, anger, judgment, and he said he literally couldn't find the feelings anymore. Not that he was managing his anger. The anger generator was just gone.
And then there was Bobby, age 63. Her before list was so heavy. Anger, overwhelm, judgmental. Imagine carrying that for 6 decades.
And 2.5 years later, she reports her main emotions are gratitude, awe, and patience. To go from overwhelm to awe at 63, that is a massive neuroclastic shift. That's a different personality.
Which begs the question, if this is so effective, why isn't this the standard of care? Why have I never heard of this before?
Matheny actually dedicates a whole section to this, and it's a pretty scathing critique of the therapy industry. He lists 5 reasons, and they're all painfully practical.
Okay, let's break them down. First one was just barriers to entry. Training.
It's hard to learn. The original training was 24 days long, spread out. That's a huge commitment for a therapist. It's not some weekend certificate.
Okay. Number 2 was technological lag.
Yeah, this is interesting. He says the theory was there in 88, but the tools, like clean language, they weren't really refined until the mid-90s. So for a while, they knew what the problem was, but didn't have the right scalpel to fix it.
But the more systemic reasons were, for me, the most interesting. Number 3, marketing difficulty.
The too-good-to-be-true problem. We're conditioned to believe that deep change has to involve deep, prolonged suffering. So if you say, I can fix your lifelong anxiety in an afternoon, people don't trust you. They think you're a fraud. We feel like we have to earn our healing through struggle.
And number 4, therapist resistance.
Therapists are human. They have comfort zones. They have mortgages. If you've spent 20 years mastering one way of doing things and someone says it's outdated, you're going to resist.
Which leads right into number 5, the elephant in the room, money.
The financial incentives. The standard therapy model relies on retention, weekly sessions, for years. That's a steady revenue stream. ISI is designed to solve the problem in a few sessions, and then you're done.
So if you're too good at your job, you basically put yourself out of business.
It's a perverse incentive, isn't it? It's like a mechanic who fixes your car so well you never have to come back. Great for you. Terrible for his business.
Matheny's own pricing model is kind of a response to that, right? The guarantee.
I thought that was so bold. He charges a high fee up front, like $1,000, but that covers the problem until it's gone. He takes the financial risk.
So his incentive is to be efficient.
Exactly. It aligns the incentives perfectly. He only profits if he's effective, not just if he keeps you coming back.
So, stepping back for a minute, for the person listening who's maybe recognizing their own emotional palette in this, what's the big takeaway?
I think the biggest takeaway is compassion for yourself. If you feel stuck or lazy or anxious, stop judging it. That laziness is just your brain's survival program running exactly as designed.
You aren't broken.
You're not broken. You just have a code error. You're running on outdated data.
That shifts everything. It's not a character flaw. It's a bug.
And code can be rewritten. The virtual question can be unasked. It takes the shame right out of it. You stop fighting yourself and you just get curious. Why is this program running? Is a much better question than what's wrong with me?
That's the hope in all this, isn't it? We aren't doomed to just be the person we decided to be when we were seven.
We have agency. But true agency isn't about fighting the current harder. It's about realizing you can just get out of the river.
I think I might have to try that 7-day challenge. Maybe after my performance review next week, though.
Yeah, probably a good idea. Keep the baseline steady.
As we wrap this up, we always like to leave you with one final thought to chew on.
We've talked so much about these commands do, be, get. We spend our entire lives trying to fulfill them just to feel safe. So here's the provocation. If you could strip all that away, if you didn't need to do anything or be anyone or get anything to feel okay, if the bracing finally stopped, what would your version of peace actually look like?
That's a big one to sit with. Thanks for diving in with us.